so nice sitting together. And what I wanted to explore today together is I had the how to work with a mind, which is always something that is fascinating to me, and just the power of our mind that can take us down paths of beauty and ease, and oh boy, it can be so torturous too, right? And the stories we tell ourselves. And I listened to an interview with a gentleman whose name is Traben Shorters. And his bio is: it consults widely in philanthropy, business, nonprofits, and journalism. The founder and CEO of Be Me Community, among other things, but really sort of a thought leader in how do we work with the mind in terms of, and he's very much engaged in community building and outreach services and building community, but really looking at from the words that he uses, which I love, is called asset framing. And I want to root this in the Buddhist teachings around working with the mind and our dedication to our practice and this ability to watch the thinking mind, because it creates that little bit of a window or space to be able to make choices of, is what I'm thinking helping me or not? Or being able just to notice, like, wow, I'm so caught up in this thinking pattern of mine. And I'm intentionally using this word pattern, the pattern, the habits, the pattern mind, because in this interview, one that Daniel Kahneman is quoted in terms of the work that he's done in the mind patterning. And how he's an example, if you see a row of cars, the mind's going to make a pattern about it. So the face in the grill, or we look at clouds and we can see a pattern or a shape in the clouds, because the mind wants to make sense of things in terms of all the stimulus that the mind and the body takes in. You know, that the nervous system is connected to the brainstem. It's all of the same of a piece. But there's so much to stimulation that's being filtered in. And I read somewhere that something like 3 or 5% of what we take in actually becomes conscious, which is staggering. But there's so much that's happening. And one of the ways that the mind organizes things is sort of creating patterns. And this gentleman, Traben Shorters, is pointing to the ways in which we are so inclined to frame things through a deficit. And he uses an example, say, of at-risk youth. Kid who is an at risk is going to invoke all these different images, and the he's looking at from a sort of a funding viewpoint of what goes into funding and supporting kids who are at risk. And he's like, these kids for the most part are going to school and they would like to graduate and be able to contribute to society. Let's call them students who would like to graduate from school. And he talks about when he goes works with organizations, that framing is much different, because it's looking at what are the aspirations of these kids coming up, or whatever people that we're working with, this beautiful lens that he offers of what if we look for the aspirations of what people are actually aiming to do with their lives. And he speaks about the influence of his grandparents, and they were founded a church in Michigan, and this way in which the aspiration includes spirit, sort of what's the spirit yearning to offer in this world. And this, and I'm such a believer, and we all have gifts that we are born with, and how do we learn in this lifetime to offer them through the various conditions and limits and again, conditions of our families and the places that we're in which we're born in our lives, but how can we strive to offer those gifts? And I love this framing of asset framing, of leaning into what are the aspirations? And he points to, if we were to walk into any group or join any Zoom group and really start thinking about how we relate to others, of what is your aspiration? He's like, 90% of us have pretty similar aspirations. And if we can come at are the ways in which we engage with others from that place of a shared set of aspirations, as opposed to, as I've spoken before, of like this incredible polarization of who's right, who's wrong, and a rigidity around beliefs. When really, what are we believing about others and most primarily about ourselves? And Tarbrock shares a story, and I might not, I probably won't get the wording right here, but I think the intention is true, that when she was on a book tour for her first book, Radical Acceptance, way back in the day, and she said she was giving a talk, and she walked into some, maybe a hotel room or something, and the they have those posters of her face, the author, and then the title of it was sort of her face, the book, this little bit, but then a big like, "Something's wrong with me" was sort of the heading of the talk. And she looked at it and she's like, "That's not really yes, and that's not really what I'm aiming for, but just this way in which we can be so inclined to believe, oh, there's something wrong with me." And even as a therapist, the sort of, well, what is wrong? It's like what I love so much about the framing of somatic experiencing is it's really about, what are your resources? Where's the strength? And can we lead from a place of strength to then be able to face with what are the challenges? And again, back in this interview with Traven Shorters, he makes such a clear point that this isn't just, let's go for the positive and the strength. It's like, yes, challenges are a part of the conversation, but they're not the obstacles, and they're not pieces, they're not identities. Right. And what the work that he's doing, he's like, poverty is a state. It's not an inborn trait. It's not an identity. It's a circumstance. And just this movement and fluidity the fluidity and also the rigidity that can come around how we speak about things, the languaging we use. And to come back to the Buddhist teachings from the Dhammapada, all experiences preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind, speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows, right? We know this. Suffering follows as a wagon wheel follows the hoof of an ox. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind, speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never departing shadow. And we can have waves of the ways the mind can be in a corrupted mind, a negative mind, a deficit orienting mind. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with my life? How did I mess up my life? What's wrong? That circle of that eddy pool that we can get spun in, as opposed to this peaceful mind of a gentling mind that can look at our world and be like, oh, okay, it's just like this. There may be challenges, and each of us have different challenges based on karma and conditions and all the various myriad of things that make our lives different. And yet this power of this practice that can say, wait a minute, look, this mind that I have, this thought train, this mind pattern is more of a corrupted mind. It's more of leading me more into deeper territories of suffering, as opposed to the peaceful mind. A little bit more from the Dhammapada on the mind: the restless, agitated mind, hard to protect, hard to control. The sage makes straight as a fletcher the shaft of an arrow. Like a fish out of water, thrown on dry ground, the mind thrashes about, trying to escape Mara's command. The mind, hard to control, flighty, alighting where it wishes, one does well to tame. The disciplined mind brings happiness. The mind, hard to see, subtle, alighting where it wishes, the sage protects. The watched mind brings happiness. For one who is awake, whose mind isn't overflowing, whose heart isn't afflicted, and who has abandoned both merit and demerit, fear does not exist. And it goes on, neither mother nor father nor any other relative can do one as much good as one's own well-directed mind. Right? Amazing. And this way in which, in our practice, this moment-to-moment attention of, where is my mind and what's happening? And sometimes it can feel totally out of control. Like, but that pause, the reflection, the witnessing of, oh, wow, my mind is all over the place. Right? There's such a profound muscle to exercise, because then we're not getting carried along with it. I'm missing a page. This is from William Stafford. Being a person. Be a person here. Stand by the river. Invoke the owls. Invoke winter, then spring. Let any season that wants to come here make its own call. After that sound goes away, wait. A slow bubble rises through the earth and begins to include skies, stars, all space, even the outracing expanded thought. Come back and hear the little sound again. Come back and hear that call. Suddenly, this dream you are having matches everyone's dream, and the result is the world. If a different call came, there wouldn't be any world or you or the river or the owls calling. How you stand here is important. How you listen for the next things to happen. How you breathe. Right, come back and hear that sound. Everyone's dream matches, right? And aligning with that notion that we all pretty much have similar aspirations. May we feel loved. Be seen, be have some level of contentment, have connection with others, be safe in our bodies and at home, on and on. But this ways in which we can lean into, with the support for many of us being out in nature and standing by the river, invoking the owls, invoking spring, winter, right? Aligning ourselves with the natural world of which we are a part, not separate. And the degree to which we lean into the story or the narrative of I am a part, I am better, I am worse, I am different, I am other, I'm included. That way of thinking often, and I'll say this personally, leads to a lot of suffering and loneliness and disconnection. But when we can allow ourselves to stand here in the earlier invitation of be in our bones, this earth element that's here as related to the earth element upon which we stand, there's connection there. Yeah. Share a little bit back to this. I want to read a little bit just because how he speaks is so great. Okay, so here's just a little bit more about the asset framing. Well, that's the aspiration, right? So if I'm applying asset framing, if we're defining ourselves by our aspirations to make the world a better place, then all these other things, the negative consequences, it's not intentional, it's accidental. You might want to magnify human life. You might want people to live more fully. You want folks to have greater opportunity. You want more justice, more freedom. You want all these things. So I just want to show you how the instrument that you've been taught to use has a big hole in the bottom. Like when we focus more on the deficit and what's wrong, that we need to be able to lean into what's working in for individuals through their aspirations. And again, bringing back to the personal, the internal, how do we in our own lives focus on the deficit, and how can we start to really include in both our strengths? And even that question of sort of sitting with the body, like where doesn't the body hurt? What is working? Where are my resources? Even when we're feeling, many of us in these times, really depleted. Okay. And where is there some strength? What do I believe in? What are the aspirations I have? And being able to come back to really, in some ways, the Pali word of sadha. Where do I rest my heart? It's in this faith in our capacity to meet whatever comes, which is both aspirational. I can have faith in my capacity to meet what comes, and it can be the ground or the nutrients in the soil, right? This is something I believe. I share this poem called What I Believe by Jacqueline Woodson. What I believe in God and evolution. I believe in the Bible and the Quran. I believe in Christmas and the New World. I believe there is good in each of us, no matter who we are or what we believe in. I believe in the words of my grandfather. I believe in the city and the South, the past and the present. I believe in Black people and white people coming together. I believe in nonviolence and power to the people. I believe in my little brother's pale skin and my own dark brown. I believe in my sister's brilliance and the two easy books I love to read. I believe in my mother on a bus and Black people refusing to ride. I believe in good friends and good food, Malcolm and Martin, Buckeyes and Birmingham, writing and listening, bad words and good words. I believe in Brooklyn. I believe in one day, in someday, in the perfect moment called now. So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. And to consider, if you were to write such a poem, what do I believe? I believe in. And to let the mind play, what are the phrases or the words that come? I believe in. I believe in. I have faith in. I rest my heart upon. I aspire to. I believe in. I have faith in. I rest my heart upon. I aspire to. And allowing these phrases just to repeat, whichever ones work, if you have others of the same ilk that work better. And just allowing yourself to see what comes. I believe in. I aspire to. I rest my heart upon. I have faith in. And to allow this collage, this collection of images and words to form perhaps its own poem, its own painting. However, whatever form what's invoked takes, again, words, images, colors, pictures of people, of places. I believe in, I aspire to. I rest my heart upon. What are these patterns? How does the mind map the answers to these questions? What patterns emerge? I believe in. I aspire to. I rest my heart upon. And letting the mind linger here. Yeah. And again, noticing, what is the pattern? What do you notice? If this were to be a painting or a picture, what might it look like? If you were to encapsulate this into an image, a word, a talisman of some sort that you could tuck in your pocket, hold in your hand, jot down on a sticky note, what would it be? As a reminder of the strength of the heart, the connections of the mind and the body and the heart and the aspirational qualities in which we want to live and how we want to show up in the world to share our gifts in this one precious life. So I'm going to stop here and would love to open this up to hear from you all.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.